Welcome to the Healthy You Radio Network, radio that empowers you to heal you. This is Keisha Ewers, your network host, and I'm proud to introduce the most dynamic show on radio that's all about the health of your mind and the expansion of your consciousness. Welcome to Mind Matters Radio with meditation and Reiki master Ajayan Boris.
Ever wonder what you're really capable of? Scientists tell us we use only a fraction of our true potential. Welcome to Mind Matters, part of the Healthy You Radio Network, where we'll explore the frontiers of human growth. Find out what experts in the field of psychology, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, and science have to say that will help you to live your life to the fullest. And now your host, Ajayan Boris.
And welcome, everyone, to Mind Matters. I'm Ajayan Boris, your fellow explorer of human potential. And we're here every Monday at 1 p.m. for one reason, and that is because your mind really does matter. It's probably the most important thing I can think of, at least one of them. And we want to empower you to heal and develop your mind. So today we have a guest, Tammy Strobel. She is the author of You Can Buy Happiness. I should say You Can Buy Happiness, and It's Cheap. How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. Tammy is also creator of the popular blog, Rowdy Kittens. Tammy, welcome to Mind Matters.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show.
All right, sure. So, Tammy, you have kind of an interesting story behind how you came to write this book. Could you kind of just give us an overview of that and for our listeners?
Oh, sure. Well, I've been blogging for, I guess, about 4 or 5 years now. And in 2010, I kind of got up and did my normal thing, made coffee, checked my email, and I was scanning through email messages, and I had a note from a New York Times reporter who was asking if I'd be interested in helping her out with an article about downsizing and happiness. And I said I was interested, and kind of to make a long story short, we were featured in this piece that went viral online, and as a result, I was contacted by about a dozen literary agents, and I eventually signed with an agent and wrote this book. So it was definitely kind of a whirlwind of an experience.
Wow. That must have been really exciting. That's incredible.
Yeah.
What was the piece that you just on happiness and downsizing?
Stephanie Rosenblum, the reporter, was doing a piece about happiness and downsizing because of, you know, this great recession that we've been in. And she was kind of looking at alternative stories from, I guess, kind of the standard story that a lot of folks live. And so I was really honored to be featured in that piece. And she's a great writer, so it was fun.
Now, had you already downsized by that point, or did that come after?
Yeah, we had already downsized quite a bit by the time I was interviewed for that article. At that point, we were living in Portland, Oregon, in a 400 square foot studio.
All right. Yeah, that's pretty. I've actually done that myself. It was years ago, and that is pretty tiny.
Yeah.
Do you have any?
Cozy.
Do you have any kids?
No.
Oh, okay. Makes it a little easier.
Yes.
Okay, so how about the story of what inspired you to downsize in the first place?
Oh, gosh. Well, there are lots of inspirations along the way, but one of my biggest inspirations has been Dee Williams. And in 2007, I was surfing the internet. It was New Year's Eve, and I stumbled across this YouTube video that featured Dee and her tiny house. And her little house is, it's like a small cabin and it's on wheels. And so when I saw this little house, I was like, oh my gosh, I totally want to live in something like that, because I felt like it would give us a lot of flexibility and then financial freedom as well. So we eventually ended up building our own tiny house, and Dee actually designed our little house for us, and her business partner, Katie Anderson, built it. So Dee's been a huge inspiration to me over the years.
Now, before that, you had been, so the gist of it is that you had been, you know, living in, was it New York City or was some large city, right?
We were living in Davis, California, and then we moved to Sacramento, California.
Oh, okay. Okay. I got the wrong coast. And
oh, it's okay.
Size of city, everything's wrong. Anyway, okay. So, but you had, you know, both had jobs, two cars, sizable apartment, and and you found it stressful, and you were slipping into debt, right?
Right. I mean, we were basically in over our heads. We had a lot of student loan debt. We had car loans. We had a little credit card debt, thankfully not a lot, probably only about $1,000. But my student loans were pretty substantial. I had about $30,000 in student loans, and I was just really unhappy. I knew that I was really fortunate because, you know, I had a beautiful apartment, was married to a great man, but at the same time, I just felt super stressed out. I was trying to keep up with everybody else instead of, you know, being responsible and taking care of what I needed to take care of.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So a lot of, I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate to that kind of situation where you feel like you're on this treadmill and basically, you know, living to maintain what you have and to expand what you have, and all the energy that you put out in a, you know, towards your career and everything to be able to do that. And of course, there's the other side of it too, your sense of self-expression through your career and all that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it can really feel like you're on that treadmill, huh?
Yeah, I did feel like I was on a treadmill. And at the same time, I felt like I was sinking because, you know, I just couldn't keep up. And so after a lot of conversations with my husband, you know, we decided to start simplifying our lives. And it's been quite a long process in a lot of ways, but it's been really good for us.
Okay. So what did you do first to simplify?
Oh, gosh, lots of things. Well, I cleaned out my closet and gave a lot of stuff away to charity. But as we slowly started attacking our apartment and giving away things that we no longer needed to charity and to friends and family members. And then we started to talk about moving into a one-bedroom apartment because at the time we were in a two-bedroom apartment in Davis, California. And I just didn't believe we could squeeze all of our stuff into a one-bedroom. So we opted to basically clean out our guest bedroom and office and close the door and just pretend like we were living in a one-bedroom apartment. And so that really helped us because we actually were able to see, hey, we can do this. And, you know, we didn't invest a lot of money in moving only to find out we wouldn't be able to fit in a new place. So that was a really kind of fun experiment. And then we just opted to move to a larger one-bedroom.
Right. Okay. And then slowly but surely, you gradually downsized. You got rid of the cars at one point, as I recall, and started riding bikes to work. and all of that helped you manage your debt, start to pay it off, manage your resources better, cut out all the fat, the waste. And I imagine you felt a lot less stressed as a result.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. And so did you find your happiness index rising as you cut down those simplified?
Yeah, definitely. I just felt a lot of relief because we were kind of cutting out the unnecessary stuff we no longer needed and debt. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, we kind of took a step back and looked at our lives from a more holistic picture and really talked about what we wanted in our futures. And you know, that included having strong relationships, doing work we loved, you know, having time to go on hikes and bike ridings. And so just really simple kind of basic things. And so over time we made that happen and are happier as a result.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the title, You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap. how does that title make sense with this?
Oh, well, it's a couple of things. I do think you can buy happiness. And by that, I mean, you know, we all need basic things to really be happy. And that includes, you know, a safe, warm home to live in, the ability to buy food, you know, to kind of be above the poverty level. And so in that way, I do think money can buy happiness and stability. And also, interestingly, as I was researching this book, a lot of happiness researchers have found that instead of buying more stuff like a new car or like more clothes or new shoes, that people are happier and better off when they buy experiences if they have excess income. So, for example, investing in a weekly yoga class or maybe going out to dinner once a week with your partner or planning, you know, a month-long vacation if you have that kind of flexibility. So I thought that was a really interesting tidbit of research as I wrote the book.
That's interesting. That, you know, that's something that my wife has said for as long as I've known her, that the most important thing for her is experiences. And so she does, you could say, buy those for her kids and for us. And so we do a lot of things. And her kids have traveled all over and had many different experiences. That's interesting. I didn't realize that that had been scientifically shown to enhance your well-being or happiness.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. Like, the researchers found that, you know, as humans, we adapt to things really quickly. So, like, you know, the shiny new car will be really awesome for a few weeks or a month, but then you get used to it, and it just becomes kind of part of your routine, whereas with experiences like a vacation or a yoga class or a dinner date, you constantly can reflect on those memories, so you're kind of getting positive feedback in your mind, which is kind of cool, I think.
Okay. So you have a little chapter on stuff won't make you happy or something like that. Tell us a little bit more about that. Why, and this might be a little philosophical, but I'm curious to hear your answer. Why is it that buying stuff won't make you happy?
Well, I think it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, and that, you know, I don't think it's a blanket rule, because stuff can be great tools. Like, I use my laptop every day to get my work done, and it makes me really happy. It's something that I'm constantly using. But I think, you know, buying stuff for the sake of buying it to keep up with other people is where the problem lies. And, you know, researchers have shown that, it just doesn't make people happy, kind of getting on this acquisition treadmill, because stuff, you know, like I was saying, you adapt to it once it becomes part of your everyday routine. So you're better off, you know, buying those experiences or really focusing on the relationships in your life, because strong relationships are one of the number one indicators to leading a happy and healthy life.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, and like you say, yeah, buying experiences that can enhance your relationships, you know, where, like, one thing my wife and I love to do here in the Northwest, there's so many beautiful places, and especially during the sunnier months, we like to, you know, go and take a weekend here and a weekend there. We do that pretty regularly throughout the, you know, the summer and fall, and it's just wonderful. We love those times. It really brings us closer and all of that. So that's kind of cool. Okay. So let's say all other factors were equal. You kind of actually alluded to this already, but let's dig into it a little bit if we can. If all other factors were equal, would having more things make you happier? And how, maybe not just more things, but like you said a little bit, certain tools allow you to do things more efficiently, et cetera. What can you say about that? What kind of choices can we make that would be intelligent about accumulating stuff instead of just for accumulation, but, you know, that might actually enhance our well-being?
Sure. Well, let me give you kind of a personal example. I recently bought a new laptop, and I spent probably 6 months to a year thinking about, like, actually buying this new laptop. I bought a MacBook Air. And my old laptop was probably 6 years old, and it had started to fail. But, you know, I held off buying the new laptop because I just wanted to be sure that it was something I really needed, and I wasn't kind of fooling myself into thinking that I needed a MacBook Air, if that makes sense, versus, like, needing it for work and and making my daily routine a little better. And I realized, like, after a lot of thought, that purchasing this new computer would help me be a little more efficient. It was faster. And so for me, whenever I make big purchases or little purchases, I kind of try and take a step back and think about, do I really need this or do I just want it because I've seen a cool ad, for example. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think everyone's life is different and what they need is going to be different. But I think just kind of stepping back and asking yourself those questions can be really helpful. And I know for me, it's very helpful because it prevents me from just kind of running out and buying the latest gadget or new pairs of shoes or things like that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really good advice. That sounds great. In fact, in your I think we are definitely a consumer society. And you pointed out in your book that the Mall of America, I think, isn't that what it's called? Actually, has become one of the main tourist attractions in the United States.
It's pretty incredible. I was shocked when I read that.
Yeah, and nowadays physical malls, you know, that's certainly one place people, you know, spend lots of money on things that they may or may not need. But, you know, of course, over the internet now, shopping on the internet is just incredibly, you know, accessible and just a click of a mouse and you've got yourself a new whatever. It's so easy and out the door goes your money and then you got your back on the treadmill, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And kind of, you know, going back to those questions, asking yourself, do I need this? Do I want this? And then something else that I do is, you know, I'll wait at least 30 days, sometimes longer if I'm going to buy something new, and especially longer if the purchase is a big one, like a computer, so that I can really evaluate and make sure I'm making the right choice. Because like you said, you know, it's so easy to buy things nowadays, especially with the internet. So, yeah.
Right, right. Well, you sound like I have a kindred spirit in you, because I'm kind of like that, too. And I do, you know, like to research what I buy very carefully and, you know, look at reviews and look at, you know, many different items that are in the same, you know, that would serve as the same kind of tool. That's just me, you know.
Yeah.
But I also found it kind of interesting that you cite the Happy Planet Index that was conducted by the New Economics Foundation. And this was pretty fascinating. I actually clicked on this and did a little more research after seeing it in your book. And in that, the New Economics Foundation, their findings was that the U.S. actually ranks 114 out of 143 countries measured for the, quote, ecological efficiency with which human well-being is delivered. And and that's kind of interesting. By that, I found they basically meant, you know, how the measure of well-being in what it costs in terms of natural resources to, you know, to get that well-being, basically.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And the U.S. is 114th out of 143 countries. That's
incredible.
And why do you think that is?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of us believe we can find happiness at the mall. And I know I felt that way for a long time. And, you know, there's a lot of resources that go into making stuff. And, you know, stuff isn't inherently bad. But I think it would be good for all of us to kind of take a step back before running out and buying something. And I just think that kind of that desire to go out and buy and try and keep up with other people can be really unhealthy. And I think that's why the rating is so low. And I don't know, it's a complex topic, but I just really believe that focusing on relationships and experiences and things like that will make you happier in the long run.
Right, right. Well, it is a complex topic and we have to go to a break, but when we come back, I want to get a little more into the complexities, so stay with us. You're listening to Mind Matters. I'm Ajayan Boris, and we're talking with Tammy Strobel about how you can simplify your life and become happier for it.
Do you suffer from pain? Pain comes in many forms, from muscle aches and pains to nerve pain. It's painful not to have the energy you want, or to suffer from allergic reactions to food, the environment, or your pets. An innovative technology that is being used at Harvard Medical School could be your answer. The Aura PTL laser system is like acupuncture with no needles. It works on the energy body and the physical body, bringing relief from pain, hormone imbalance, adrenal fatigue, and even allergies of all kinds. Combined with homeopathy, this non-invasive therapy brings healing on all the levels of your body. To find out more about laser therapy, go to fernlifecenter.com or call 425-391-3376. That's 425-391-3376. Your consultation with Keisha Yours, ARNP, is covered by most insurance companies. Call now.
Information provided on the Healthy You radio show is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for the advice provided by your physician or other healthcare professional. You should not use the information from the broadcast of the radio show for diagnosing or treating a health problem, disease, or prescribing any medication or other treatment.
If you are tired of feeling sluggish, overweight, and out of balance, then welcome to the Ideal Protein Weight Loss Method. The Fern Life Center now offers this medically designed protocol that results in fat loss while sparing muscle mass. The Ideal Protein Weight Loss Method is an easy four-phase protocol that helps stabilize the pancreas, hormones, and blood sugar levels while burning fat and maintaining muscle. Not to mention an excellent support for cellulite reduction. The best part? We guarantee success. Welcome to your last diet. Call the Fern Life Center now and register for our next free introductory seminar. That's right, free. Call 425-391-3376 or go to fernlifecenter.com. Mention this ad and qualify for a drawing to receive your first product free. Call 425-391-3376 and find your healthy you. Meditation heals and vitalizes both mind and body. Learn this wonderful art with world-renowned meditation instructor Ajayan Boris in the Effortless Mind Meditation Classes. The Effortless Mind Meditation Classes offer a direct experience of exceptionally deep meditation, accessible to anyone. Call the Fern Life Center today, 425-391-FERN. The Effortless Mind. So easy, anyone can do it.
Ajayan's next Effortless Mind Meditation class will be held March 9th. Visit ajayan.com to register and for more information.
Time for something different. Time for Alternative Talk 1150.
Happiness, more or less, it's just a change in me, something in my liberty. Happiness coming and going. I watch you look at me, watch my fever growing. I know just where I am. But how many corners do
I? All right, and welcome back. You're listening to Mind Matters. I'm Ajayan Boris, and Mind Matters is part of the Healthy You Radio Network. If you can't tune in each Monday at 1 p.m., you can access all of our shows 24/7 via podcast or archived on healthyyouradio.com or ajayan.com. And if you're out of radio range, you can listen live online via healthyyouradio.com. All right. So we are speaking with Tammy Strobel, and she is the author of You Can Buy Happiness and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. And I would say this book would be very useful for anyone in our society. You just heard the statistics, how we come out 104th out of 143 countries on the efficiency of how we achieve whatever degree of well-being we have in this country. And that's an indicator that we have some lessons to learn how to be more efficient in terms of the resources the world's resources we use to feel good. And interestingly, Tammy, I found when I went to that website of the New Economics Foundation, mm-hmm. That Costa Rica was number one.
Yeah, really fascinating.
Yeah.
I haven't been there, but I'd love to visit.
I would, too. That made me, I told my wife, hey, we got to move to Costa Rica once, you know, once we decide to get off the treadmill. Also, it was interesting, Vietnam was number two. That was
kind of
a surprise. But they're, you know, they're weighing different factors. So it's kind of, it's you have to go there and check out that website if you have an interest in that. So now, you know, one thing occurs to me. There's another whole side of this. And I wonder if you've thought about that or written about this. And that is, you know, like a lot of times, you know, we have a couple kids in college. And so the expenses, you know, just start to skyrocket, right? And and in a way, this is incentive for us to, you know, even be more what, you know, just dive even more into our passions to, you know, manifest what it takes to put our kids through college. So it's kind of like you can be on this treadmill where you're uselessly buying stuff, or what about the case where, you know, by expanding in your life in different ways, and in some cases, very necessary ways, it stimulates you to further actualize yourself. What do you say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true in a lot of ways. And, you know, in my experience, I've found that to be really true and honest. I mean, just kind of helping me, this whole simplifying thing has helped me reshift my focus in my career. And so I went from working in investment management to nonprofits, and now I'm doing writing and photography. And so over the years, I feel like I've honed in on kind of what I love to do for a living. And that's just been a really neat and kind of unexpected thing from downsizing and simplifying.
Okay. All right. So, so for you, simplifying has been a way to further actualize yourself, basically.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, it's like now I have the time to kind of think about where I want to be and what I want to do. And so I think, you know, that leads to further, I guess, self-actualization, because if you're kind of always in a rush and in a hurry, it's kind of hard to just stop and take a breath and think about what your next step is or what's really important. So it's been a really nice thing for me to kind of have that gift of time and being able to slow down.
Mm-hmm. So I could see, like, this may not be true for you at all, but I could see in some cases somebody could, you know, just kind of downsize and downsize and downsize, and then, you know, end up in a situation where they're sort of isolated, curmudgeonly, you know, non-contributors. You know what I mean?
I don't know if I would agree with that. I think a lot of folks who downsize to, you know, with like us, for example, I mean, I think some people have assumed that, like, we're not, like, active in the community or that we're super frugal and don't spend any money. But, you know, that's really not the case. In a lot of ways, I feel like, you know, I'm more connected to my community and to my relationships, and I have a choice of how I want to spend my money. And so I think that's true for a lot of people who have simplified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To me, it seems, you know, just off the top of my head, it feels like it's a matter of, you know, balance.
Basically. Sure, sure.
You know, there's definitely the certain pressures in your life that definitely, you know, keep you becoming everything that you can be, you know. And then there's also just the choice to become everything that you can be. And sometimes simplifying is very necessary to have that choice.
Yeah, and I think that's true for my experience. And, you know, it's kind of, life is never easy. There's always something, you know, that you have to deal with. And during 2012, my family had a really hard year. My dad was ill, and so, you know, I spent a lot of time traveling between Oregon and California helping take care of him, and that was a gift, but at the same time, it was very difficult, and he passed away in June. But I guess you know, the point being is that, you know, I had the time to help take care of him, but also that I don't think life is ever easy. But I think for me, simplifying has given me a lot of tools to be a little more resilient and to find hope even in really dire circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So let's talk about how, you know, maybe there's some listeners out there really resonating with this and feeling like, yeah, I've got to simplify my life. So you started with your closet. Any other suggestions where people can start and how they can begin to, you know, simplify their lives?
Oh, sure. I think, you know, if you're really feeling overwhelmed just by the stuff in your home, to start small. I mean, you can give away 10 to 20 things a week if you don't have a lot of time to just do a huge clean out of, you know, an extra room. And kind of taking just those small steps, I think, is less overwhelming. And it's one of the strategies I used as we were, you know, first starting this process, as I was kind of regrouping and refiguring out, like, what I wanted and what I needed. And so just kind of starting with those small baby steps is a good thing. And then just kind of looking at all aspects of your life and thinking about, you know, if you have debt, how you can start paying that off. And maybe in the short term, you might have to give up some things, but in the long term, you might benefit from changing certain consumption patterns to pay off that debt. So those would be a few suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So is that basically taking these small steps is what you refer to in the book as micro actions?
Right.
Okay. Okay. Because at the end of each of your chapters, basically you have, you know, a few micro action suggestions, right?
Yeah, I do. And I tried to be kind of specific in the tips so that readers would have some ideas in terms of, you know, how to get started. Because I have a lot of stories and research in the book. And I think both of those things can be really useful, but it's nice to kind of have practical, like, well, how do I get started with this? And then, you know, you might find your own ideas along the way and just be creative and kind of have fun with the process.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of stories, have you heard from any, you know, feedback from the book or people that you may have just, you know, talked to them about this whole process and they've tried it in their lives and how it has worked? Any favorite kind of stories coming back to you?
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of really sweet emails from folks who have read the book. One person, she actually has kind of been simplifying for a few years, but the book came at a nice time for her because she was downsizing from a 6,000 square foot house to a 1,200 square foot condo. And so she was kind of in this place where she was having a really hard time letting go of all the stuff in the house and art and things like that. And so it was nice to hear from her that the book kind of helped her deal with, like, the emotional ties to getting rid of her stuff. And she made the move to the smaller condo and is really happy. So that was kind of a nice story.
That reminds me of one time I was living actually in Switzerland and lived on a farm out in the country. It was a very wealthy farm and a very prosperous, busy farm. But they had the farmhouse was actually a three-story kind of, apartment building, you might say, but they are condos. And each floor was a condo in its own. And so we had the top floor and looking out across the valley and seeing the Alps and everything. And I remember so many times on the weekend sitting out on our deck, enjoying the view of the Lake Lucerne and the Alps. And the poor owners of the place were out there weeding and gardening and working so darn hard to maintain that place that I felt like, you know, just a king sitting up there. And we were just renting the place. Of course, now I also, you know, we own a fairly large property and I'm in the position of, you know, upkeep and all that. There's definitely something to be said for not having to be in that position where you've got to, you know, maintain a large property.
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of work. And I don't think, you know, large is bad per se, especially if it's something you really love. You know, like I know a lot of people who love their gardening and yard work and big homes, and that's fine if as long as you're really clear on that's what you want. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
If that's kind of the path to your happiness, that's totally okay. And I think there's all kinds of ways to simplify. And, you know, in the book, I talk a lot about how I try and be sort of non-judgmental with all of this because we all have such different life experiences and everyday realities.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's a beautiful point. If it is the path to your happiness, which it can be just wonderful to have a beautiful property and enjoy gardening. I've actually had people on the show who have talked about the meditative act of gardening and working around the house and how fulfilling that can be. So
yeah.
There's so many different, you know, things to consider, but it really comes down to what works well for you and what makes you happy and allows you to express your own creative potential.
Mm-hmm.
So I think let's go to a break now, because when I come back, I'd like to dig a little bit more into just how far you've downsized. You now live in a house on wheels that's mm-hmm. no more than 128 square feet. So I want to hear more about that and what it's like to live so simply.
Sure.
All right. So you're listening to Mind Matters. Stay with us. We'll be back in a minute to talk more with Tammy Strobel about You Can Buy Happiness.
It didn't work out. I'm covered in shells. And all I wanted was a simple thing, a simple kind of life.
Do you suffer from allergies, food sensitivities, hormone imbalance, depression, fatigue, weight gain, burnout, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, autoimmune disorders, skin problems, anxiety, or have stomach or gut issues? There is a solution. Keisha Ewers has over 30 years in medicine and brings the world of naturopathic medicine, Ayurveda, and her Western medical education together to form an integrative approach to solving the root cause of illness. Keisha spends more time with her patients than most doctors and really listens to their stories in order to help cure a problem rather than just treating symptoms. Give yourself the gift of good health and call Keisha today. Take care of your life and call Fern Life Center at 425-391-3376 for an appointment. For more information about Keisha and Fern Life Center, go to fernlifecenter.com, mention this ad, and get a copy of Keisha's anti-inflammatory lifestyle article for free. Most insurance plans accepted.
Research shows that over 90% of health issues can be attributed to stress. Not every illness requires pills, supplements, or other costly interventions. Reiki is a Japanese healing technique that calms and relaxes the entire nervous system, working on mental, physical, and spiritual levels. Our Reiki masters at Fern Life Center have been especially trained to individualize your care to suit your unique life concerns. Contact Fern Life Center at 425-391-3376. That's 425-391-3376 to begin your journey to a stress-free life and take charge of your health today. Fern Life Center also offers Reiki training programs from levels 1 through master level. As a certified Reiki master, you too can offer this beautiful healing modality to others or begin a training program of your own if you have always wanted to be a healer. Go to fernlifecenter.com for more information or call today.
Meditation heals and vitalizes both mind and body. Learn this wonderful art with world-renowned meditation instructor Ajayan Boris in the Effortless Mind Meditation Classes. The Effortless Mind Meditation Classes offer a direct experience of exceptionally deep meditation, accessible to anyone. Call the Fern Life Center today, 425-391-FERN. The Effortless Mind. So easy, anyone can do it.
Ajayan's next Effortless Mind Meditation class will be held March 9th. Visit ajayan.com to register and for more information.
Get a grip on life with Alternative Talk 1150.
And all I wanted was a simple thing, a simple kind of life.
welcome back. You're listening to Mind Matters, and I am Ajayan Boris, and we're speaking with Tammy Strobel, who is the author of You Can Buy Happiness, and It's Cheap, How One Woman Radically Simplified Her Life and How You Can Too. And I'm sure this book is available everywhere, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, anywhere that fine books are sold. Tammy, do you guys have a website by chance that people might want to look at?
My website is rowdykittens.com, so you can find my blog and books there.
So let me guess, you're a cat owner.
Yes, I am.
So, okay. And you live in a house that's on wheels, that's 128 square feet. Tell me about that.
Oh, sure. Well, it's sort of like an RV, but I think it's cuter, but I'm biased. Mm-hmm. RVs aren't bad, but we opted to go with this tiny house because it's kind of built for year-round use. It's on a trailer bed that's 16 feet long, 8 feet wide, and then the house is 13 feet tall. And, you know, it looks like a cabin on wheels, so the aesthetics are really cute. And you know, inside the house, we've designed it to meet our needs. So we have a sleeping loft and a nice little window nook and our small kitchen and bathroom and closet. And so it's small, but it works for us and what we need at this point in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now I think a lot of us listening here to this, can hardly imagine. I think the smallest place I've lived in outside of when I, was in college or something, and shared with other people, was a 400-square-foot apartment. And so 128 feet, I'm trying to think, that's like 13 by 10 or something. It seems so small. What has surprised you the most about living in such a tiny house?
Well, a couple of things. I feel more connected to the natural world now. I always have loved spending time outside, and I spend more time outside now just because it's something I love to do, and mm-hmm. So it's just fun, but it's also, it's really cool just hearing, like, the pitter-patter of rain on the roof and being able to see kind of the changing seasons, and it's kind of a new experience for us in a lot of ways because we've been apartment dwellers for most of our lives, and at least for me, a lot of my apartments didn't have a lot of windows, and the lighting was bad, and so we have a lot of windows in our small space, and it just feels really open and airy, so that's really nice for us.
Okay. Let's see. And now, why on wheels?
Well, just the wheels kind of give us the flexibility of movement. You know, we moved from Portland to Northern California in September of 2012, and we're living on my in-laws' cattle ranch currently. So we're in rural Northern California. Mm-hmm. And in the spring, we're thinking about moving down to Chico because my husband is going to do some teaching down there, hopefully at the college. And so it's just kind of nice to be able to bring your house with you, and it's small enough, you know, park in someone's backyard and pay them rent for the space. That's what we did in Portland, and it worked out really well.
Mm-hmm. I like that. It's kind of nice to take your house with you.
Yeah.
And on the back of your book cover, I imagine this picture was intended to be this way, but you're standing in the foreground, your house is in the background, and you have your hand out, and it looks, if you look quickly, it looks like you are holding your house on the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
It's and it looks like it fits just about on the palm of your hand. Not quite, but almost.
Yeah, it's not that tiny, but we were having fun with that. Uh-huh. That photo shoot, it was pretty cool.
Right. Well, and so I gathered also from your book that you're not the only ones who are living this in a place this downsized. You mentioned Dee earlier in the show, who helped you design and her partner helped you build your place. Mm-hmm. But there's apparently some kind of movement towards this tiny, tiny house experience.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. interesting, and it's kind of, I think it's, I don't know, it's kind of, there are no, like, meetings for this group of people, but I think they're kind of, it's a loosely connected movement, like, not only in communities, but I think on the internet, too. And my friend Kent Griswold, he runs the Tiny House blog, and that's a really great kind of starting point to check out, like, smaller dwellings. And so he features homes that, you know, or tiny houses on wheels like ours to, you know, little cottages that might be from 500 to 800 square feet. And so there's kind of, in terms of tiny homes, it's sort of a broad categorization in some ways. But it's cool because I think a lot of these little homes can be great for urban infill projects. And at least in our case, you know, it was affordable housing. We were able to pay for our house up front. And, you know, we don't have a mortgage, which frees up our time and our money for other things. And so I think there are a lot of benefits to living in smaller spaces, and they don't have to necessarily be super tiny either.
Well, and, you know, of course, like, just that whole idea of achieving well-being with the at the expense of fewer resources, certainly a smaller house, you know, right off the bat is starting to do that. And in fact, it makes me curious if you've integrated any, you know, green living type features into your house.
Well, we have our composting toilet, and we tried to use recycled materials where we could, but it wasn't like the sole focus of the building project. And, you know, of course I care about the environment and such, but it wasn't like our primary motivation to go super small. But it's definitely been a nice side effect of living so simply in that, you know, your carbon footprint is reduced. Because, you know, we don't drive, for example, our living space is small, and, you know, we don't buy tons of stuff, but we use our money for other things. So, yeah, I mean, it's a small house, so, of course, it, you know, we used resources to build it, but not as many as we would if it were a really big house, if that makes sense.
And you mentioned that you live in a rural area, so, and yet you're not driving, so how do you get groceries, how do you get around?
We bike, so bikes are really handy. We've got great bike bags that just slip onto our bike racks, and so when we go into town, we load up our bike bags and pedal back with our groceries, and it's beautiful cycling country out here. We're near Mount Shasta, and it's just gorgeous scenery, so it's definitely different, though, from Portland, and I'm really glad that we've had this experience of living in a rural area, and it's definitely more challenging without a car.
Well, and, you know, that brings up something that you talk about in your book, too, the power of tiny pleasures. Like, once you downsize and simplify your life, some of the smaller features, what you might think of as smaller features of your life, start to come to the fore, and you can start to enjoy those. Can you give us some examples of that?
Oh, sure. I think for me, like, good coffee is, like, this amazing thing. Like, every morning I have just amazing coffee, and it's a little more expensive than, like, Folgers or something, but, like, we'll buy coffee from, like, Kawava Coffee Roasters in Portland or Stumptown or local brewers in Mount Shasta. And so that's kind of fun to be able to support, like, local coffee people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, coffee is a huge thing for me in the morning. It's part of my writing ritual, and it's something I enjoy tremendously.
Right. Well, I'm sure nobody here in the Seattle area can relate to that.
Yeah, not at all, I'm sure.
Okay. We're getting just about close to the end of our hour, but I did want to touch on one other thing that you talk about in your book, community. We often hear how important that is to happiness. What are your thoughts on community, and has this helped in any way for you to connect with others?
Oh, definitely. I didn't volunteer as much when I was working a lot of hours, but now I have more time to do so. And, for example, when I was when we had just moved to Portland, I started volunteering with an organization called Living Yoga, and I volunteered there for about, I guess it was 2.5 years or so. And for me, it was a great way to meet new people and kind of get plugged into the yoga community. And for me, you know, being new to the area and not having many friends, it was really, it was kind of like two gifts in one. I could give my gift of time, and that made me happy to the organization. And then in turn, I made new friends from volunteering. So I think it holds a lot of bonuses.
All right. Okay. So any last thoughts that you'd like to convey to our listeners before we...
Oh, gosh. I just would say to, you know, take things slow if you're just starting to downsize, that you don't have to rush, and to just remember that, you know, stuff really isn't that important in the long run, that it's really your relationships that matter the most. So to just try and focus on those.
Now that sounds like sage advice. I like that. Definitely. There's, I bet you there's, you know, a number of studies out there about happiness, and I doubt very seriously, I mean, I'm sure, I should say, let me put it this way, I'm sure that relationships come right at the top of the list when it comes to
factors.
They
are, yeah.
Yeah. And community, I have read that before, community is definitely up there at the top for happiness and even longevity.
Definitely.
There's research that shows that. Well, Tammy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Once again, the book is You Can Buy Happiness, and it's cheap. And the author is Tammy Strobel. Check it out. Simplify your life. Get happier. You've been listening to Mind Matters, part of the Health U Radio Network. Check out my website, ajan.com. Also, next week, I'm going to be interviewing Andrea Adler about her breakout novel, Pushing Upward, and that was a winner of a 2012 Los Angeles Book Festival Award, so should be very interesting. Join us next week. I'm Ajan Boris. You've been listening to Mind Matters, part of the Healthy You Radio Network.